Sup, Joe?
Hey, what's up, party boy? Welcome back from the left coast.
Yeah, man, it was a good time. We had a lot of fun out there. We went a little nuts on tacos. I don't know if you saw my post about that.
I did.
That was,
I know that's your favorite.
Well, dude, it was great because we're out there, and you know, San Diego has the Mexican food down, and so we just decided, you know, fuck it, let's go for it. So, you know, every time we'd say on another dinner, hey, let's do tacos, I kept thinking my son would be like, I'm about done with tacos, Dad. And he was like, no, let's do it. So it was great. We had a really good time. We had a lot of fun.
Give me like a special one. What was your, like the new one that you hadn't had before?
So I had one with cactus, which was really interesting, at a place called El Gordo Tacos. And that was really good. And actually, they also had a pork that they cut off like you do for, you know, those spinning rotisserie gyro machines. They have all this pork stacked up on that, and they just slice it off of that thing like you do when you're making a gyro. And it was amazing, amazing, really good. I think it was called, I want to call it Adobado or something like that, but that was really good. And the second night we had some, we went to a place that's a little more foo-foo than I normally like. I'm not a big fan of, you know, gourmet Mexican or whatever, but this was actually fantastic. And they also had a really nice fresh guacamole with it. But there was nothing exotic in terms of the ingredients. They just kind of do some different toppings and flavorings in their marinades.
What'd you order there?
I think I went with just the standard beef and pork.
Like carne asada or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those were excellent. I'm trying to think. Where else did we go? Los Cuchos, I think is what it was called, was my favorite. And they were just standard street tacos, but the tacos were just fantastic. The meat was, the carne asada was slightly smoked. And it was really good. And then I'd never had a birria, which is kind of like a deep fried kind of taco. The shell is deep fried, and like you know, similar to what you get at like American crunchy tacos, but not like really good. And I had that with this almost like a pulled pork, a spicy pulled pork, which was really, really good at another place. So, and then we hit a bunch of great ice cream spots out there too. So it was a festival of food for my favorite things.
Was it in La Jolla or was it in San Diego?
In San Diego. So we were downtown. We stayed near the airport, but we were, the airport is so close in that city. Yeah, it's crazy.
Right by the water. I know.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's really nice. So our hotel was facing the water and that was great. But, the gas lamp district had two of the places that we went to, and then outside of the city, I don't think they were in La Jolla because they were north central, but I don't know what town we were actually in when we went to some of these places, but it was great. We toured, you know, University of California, San Diego and San Diego State. My son loved University of California, San Diego. It's number 3 in public universities. So he's actually really hyped about that school. So that was good. And then of course we had Comic-Con. So that was both of us, our first time going there. And that was some crazy shit, but it was a lot of fun. It was really great. He dressed up as Spot, the new character from the Spider-Verse movie. So he did the whole cosplay thing. And you know, you get to kind of be a celebrity for a day because he was the only one that had done that costume. And so people were taking his picture all day that day. And so it was fun for him to be, you know, a celebrity and people kind of fawning over the costume that my wife made for him. And it was a great trip.
So you were the one pocketing the 20s though.
For there you go. Yeah. I was charging for photos. Exactly. Great trip though. A lot of fun. Yeah. We had a good time. So it was good. So
yeah,
Lots going on in crypto world. Niblet says San Diego is a great relaxing place. Did you hit Coronado Island Beach? Oh, Balboa Park. So we hit Balboa Park. There are 18 museums in Balboa Park. And we bought a four museum pass for the day. And we hit this museum called the Museum of Us that has all these different kinds of collections around, you know, like humans and what they've done in the world. And so there was one on cannibals. There was one on beer. There was one on, I can't remember what else. Then we hit the big art museum. They had a model railroad museum, which was really cool and pretty insane. These massive, massive model railroads built out. And what else did we hit? Art museum. Oh, we went to the Japanese gardens, which were amazing on the side of the, basically on the side of the, not the mountain, but it's bigger than a hill. And you're going down and there's these beautiful, beautiful spots all the way down, koi ponds and the whole bit. That I highly recommend. Balboa Park is like 1,200 acres. And it's amazing. 18 museums, beautiful, just walks around the park. It's San Diego's a great town. Now, let me tell you the downside. They have a horrible homeless problem, like really bad. Like downtown, there are little mini tent cities everywhere. And this sounds very, there's that smell you get when there's a lot of homelessness in an area. Let's just say, keep put it that way. And it's really sad to see. And it's, it obviously takes away from the experience, but at the same time, obviously it's a problem, and it's a big problem because of the cost of housing out there. It's just really fucking expensive to live out there. The other interesting thing that came out of it is in California, the schools are no longer taking into account test scores for admission. So that kind of limits some things. My son got a 1500 on the SAT and 33 on the ACT, and a lot of schools have been mailing him because of that. But in California, it doesn't matter. There are still some scholarship opportunities, but if you've got kids about to get ready to go off to college or starting to think about it, do know that the California schools are no longer utilizing the test scores.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you, that's what they all say, you know, Brown and Harvard and Yale too. But I was talking to some admission counselors and they're like, no, we look at it all. And so send it in is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely sending it in. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing for him is he's got to get scholarships out of state, because in state he has Bright Scholars, he has Florida Prepaid, and I'm sure kind of some of the second tier schools will throw him money because of his scores are so great and his GPA is great. But he really wants to go someplace besides Florida. And so we've just said, look, you know, if somebody will throw money at you because of what you've accomplished, go for it. But, you know, we're not going to put out a ton. Everybody knows where the market is. So we're not doing the big expensive schools, but the good news is schools like Yale and Stanford are all, throwing money at people. So we'll see what happens, but we're excited for him. He's going out to Colorado next week. Yeah. Going out to Colorado next week with his mother.
To Boulder.
Boulder. Nice. University.
Colorado State
University, Colorado, Denver, I think I don't know. There's a few other public schools.
I think there's a University of Denver. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he's going to look at a few out there. My wife's best friend lives out there, so they can stay with them. And anyway.
Oh, cool.
So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember your wife was going to go to eat Denver when we were heading out there.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I have noticed, it was a good article in the New York Times or Washington Post the last couple of days about aid at all those top schools.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Look, you know, you have to either be really poor because, you know, or really rich.
Yeah.
Because you see the admit of the top 1%.
I saw that.
You saw that graph. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anybody that's in the, you know, 50 to 99th percentile, there's no money out there, dude.
Right.
Unless you want to take loans or you get scholarships. But, you know, when I talk to like all those schools up in the Northeast, they don't do merit scholarships anymore.
Really? Wow.
They just do financial aid. So
only need based.
Yeah. I mean, wow. You know, so my daughter is in the same position, you know, Florida Prepaid, Bright Scholar, whatever the hell that was called. There's a couple other ones around in Florida. But she's going to go somewhere else. And what I was going to tell you is you can take that 10K of the Florida Prepaid and apply it to the other school.
Yeah.
So I think Cal out of state, because I was just looking at it the other day for Berkeley, you know, they're like all 46,000 out of state. I think.
I know, man. It's like brutal.
Yeah. So, but when you think about it, it's like, you know, it's like 25 grand twice a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always get paydays higher than that, you know, a couple times a year. So I kind of looked at it as just, oh, well, you know, it's what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and look, I think he's, I think we'll be in good shape, but you know, we'll see what, we'll see what he gets offered. And
look at all those options. And he's coming into his senior year. So,
yep.
But yeah, no, it's definitely tough. You know, it's hard to figure that stuff out. So anyhow, we got a lot of crypto stuff, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a shit ton. Like when I was gone, the XRP ruling, came out, which was exciting. A lot of fun. I made a bunch of commentary on Twitter. I'm not going to go into it, but you know, bottom line is, if you fight these guys, they don't have a lot of leg to stand on. And they don't have the resources to fight. So, it's going to be interesting to see if they appeal or how they appeal. If they do the, what is it called? The interlocutory appeal, which is where they ask the judge to allow them to appeal before the case is over. Or if they drop the other suit against the founders, and then just close this one down so they can go appeal the ruling here. I don't know what they're going to do, but I sure as hell am enjoying their discomfort and public thrashing about.
Yeah, so. I see it like that. Okay, what the ruling said to me is that on the secondary market, it's not a security. But in the primary market, it was a security when they sold to retail and they conducted a securities offering. And that's what they're settling on.
No, when they sold to institutional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when they, I'm sorry, I said retail. I meant institutional because those are sophisticated buyers that would know it was going to go up or would do it only because they thought it was going to go up.
Yeah.
So it gets a lot of clarity there, but it doesn't get them off the hook for a capital raise. So that's where we kind of want it. We don't want it where it's about. Is this, you know, we don't want it to be a security. We want this to firmly come down on that everybody that did ICOs did a, unfortunately, I think the statute of limitations is up, so it's kind of moot, but, you know, those were all securities offerings.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you, because anybody buying had an expectation it was going to go up. And that's what you follow Lewis Cohen's commentary on that, because he's been talking about this to me for, God, 4 years, that key point. That's a huge moment of clarity.
Yeah.
So, you know, now, you know, I think that, you know, because remember when that all started, it was about if you were a security, you couldn't list on a central exchange.
Right.
And that's why everybody was trying to be utility tokens to kind of, you know, broaden that definition. And now it's been better clarified. I think it's just good all around. And then it gets, you know, there's like three pieces of legislation now on the Hill, I think.
Yeah.
About crypto stuff. So.
Yes. Stuff coming out of committee. What the hell? Mm. Why is this not?
There was a couple other really good things I saw too, but there's been so many developments. I mean, the other thing is that, as I've been saying for a year, hey, there's no hard landing coming in the U.S., man. I'm sorry. It's just not coming. The stock market's burning, and it's going to burn like crazy for a couple of years. So they're like, the only reason they had raised interest rates now is because the growth is so friggin' strong. Inflation's at 3% and growth is just kicking it. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm feeling super positive, both TradeFi and crypto, because look, we know if the stock market's booming, people have extra money.
That's
what do they do at that point? They buy crypto.
Well, I hope they move it over. We need them over here because it's the liquidity shit right now. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let me share a screen here. Although I'm okay. Window. All right, so out of committee yesterday, bipartisan-wise, two crypto, I think it might have even been three, but two crypto regulatory bills left committee. You know, the House is controlled by the Republicans, but the bills that came out of it were actually pretty hammered out on a bipartisan basis, which is very heartening to me. I am concerned that all of this will go to waste because that when it gets to Biden's desk, it'll get vetoed. But, you know, who knows? We'll see. I would assume also based on, and we'll get to this in a second, but I would also assume, though, that the White House is taking an active role in the negotiations in committee.
Yeah.
So hopefully that won't be the case, unless they just want to pull a big show of saying, fuck crypto, and Biden vetoing it and trying to make a big public appeal about the fact that it's, you know, horrible and dangerous and all this shit. And
I think,
and that's the only thing they might pull. So
yeah, I think your second take is more spot on, because it's not coming out of these committees and not getting, you know, through the Senate unless the White House has weighed in.
Yeah, exactly.
Schumer has to weigh in and all of that, those guys. And once that happens, then I think, you know, you're going to get a bill that makes sense. Go ahead.
And here's the evidence to that, right? So they did derail negotiations on the stablecoin bill yesterday. Mm-hmm. So they are playing an active role, right? They are messing with the Congress. Waters is the one that killed
Maxine.
Him. Yeah, yeah. And she has, interestingly, I can't get a full read on her on crypto, because she is at times seems reasonable about this shit, and then at other times, you know, pulls the she pulled the language yesterday of, this is deeply problematic and bad for America. The stablecoin bill promotes a race to the bottom, 58 different licenses. This rhetoric. I urge Republicans to pull this extremist piece of legislation. And, you know, it's like, okay, wait a minute. Can we just back down? But obviously she was told, you know, this is the dividing line. We're not doing this shit. So we'll see.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, though, that they're actually developing the knowledge base to differentiate between the two pieces of legislation and you know, have a stablecoin bill, which, you know, to me, that makes me nervous, too, because I don't want a central bank coin.
Exactly. I don't either.
I don't want.
Well, I think that's why they're fighting it, because that's what they do want. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. But listen, I think that backs up what you were saying, which is that the White House is actively involved in these negotiations. So hopefully the legislation that comes out of this will get through the Senate because they were involved, and it'll get to the White House and be signed. But we'll see what it comes down to. I don't know.
Yeah, let's hope. We'll see. But, you know, again, we're so slow in this country, but that's democracy.
Shizzy says, Larry Fink is in Biden's pocket. I'm not worried at all. Everything Bitcoin passes. I'm not sure I would go quite that far. I think that it's the other way around as well. I think Larry Fink has the influence to push Biden in the right direction. Maybe that's what you meant, Shizzy. Larry Fink being BlackRock CEO, yeah, for those of you that don't know, who has been speaking out about the ability of crypto and blockchain to solve a lot of problems in the financial system, provide transparency, et cetera, all the rhetoric and narrative that we've talked about for a long time, years now, that needs to shift in the crypto space. So glad to see that. And I do think that that has a big influence, Shizzy. So your bottom line point makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Remember, BlackRock has $9 trillion in AUM or TVL, to put
exactly
it in by terms. And, you know, between them and BlackRock, which I think has another trillion in AUM, you know, look, that's a big friggin' number.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't think those guys want to have their own bank stable coin?
Yep.
I mean, I could see it already. $Black.
Of course. You know,
Or $Rock. One of those.
Absolutely.
$BRock, you know.
Yep.
Something's going to happen. And, you know, for their customers and, you know, I mean, gosh, because they're probably sitting there going, hey, we can start paying interest on deposits with with our crypto coin.
Exactly.
So like, you know, I mean, it's just, I just feel like everything's getting ready to explode again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Waiting for it. So
yeah, the CME showing regulated in Bitcoin and Ether futures saw record participation from large traders in the second quarter. Now, I don't know if that'll maintain, but you know, there's definitely interest in the market. So we'll see.
I'm wondering if, you know how we always talk with Sean. Oh, yeah, actually, everybody knows Sean's not here today.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, folks. By the way, Sean had some real world shit to deal with today, so he could not make it. He will be back next week with his buddy, Ed.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's going to be a really interesting conversation. This is the folks doing the Bitcoin marketing initiative that they're doing, which is really cool.
Oh,
if you're not in our community, t.me/missiondefi, t.me/missiondefi. You can see all the stuff Sean's been posting about that initiative before it goes public. So I'd highly encourage you to join t.me/missiondefi so you can engage with that, because he has asked us all for feedback and commentary and everything else. But it's going to be a really cool initiative that they're doing to promote and get people engaged with Bitcoin. So that's good.
Yeah, isn't it like Bitcoin's for everyone or something like that?
Yeah, Bitcoin is for everyone. It's called, they're calling it the Bitcoin Initiative, but the theme of the marketing is Bitcoin is for or Bitcoin's for everyone. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. The videos they've done are cool. But all of you folks that are listening and haven't joined, please do.
You know, I got a question. You know, so what I was saying with Sean is that, you know how we're always talking about a couple of things. One, you know, is it going to drop into a deep V? But the other thing is the amount of liquidity on the platforms. Yeah. And, you know, and then I see the quote that you just put up about, you know, from the CME, you know, on the, I guess, derivative positions around Bitcoin and ETH in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And futures. I start wondering, is there like, yeah, futures, is there like some kind of, you know how there's dark pools and stuff in, you know, TradeFi, where a lot of stuff gets traded OTC and there's no price sale registration. It just gets, you know, moved for whatever.
Right.
It doesn't affect market price. I wonder if they've got something like that going on trading in the futures and derivatives around this that is creating all this, I guess, action in Wall Street, so to speak, or Chicago, but that we don't see it in the on-chain liquidity. You know, is it being hypothecated or something like
that? Well, I mean, that is right. I mean, they're not actually trading real Bitcoin yet, so because it's futures. So I would assume that's a pretty good theory, actually. That's interesting.
You feel like there's a lot of activity, but then we look at things and there's no activity?
Yeah, because this is like all synthetic shit, right? So you know, you're not actually moving Bitcoin in that regard. That's interesting. I think there's something to that. That makes sense.
Love to have Sean touch on that.
Talk about that. Yeah. And Crypto Quant is saying that Bitcoin whales are in accumulation mode, accumulating and holding onto their coins as prices remain range bound. The firm backs up the analysis with three data points: exchange whale ratio, exchange inflow coin days destroyed. I have no idea what that means. And unspent transaction output value bands. So Crypto Quant, the data analysis tool, has done a report basically saying that Bitcoin whales are accumulating, holding, not doing anything in terms of dumping or anything else. So that's good news. That's very good news.
Absolutely.
I don't think this is that big of news. I think we'll kill it. But anyway, PancakeSwap has expanded to ZK Sync Era Network. But I will, you know what? Here's the perspective on this. PancakeSwap is aggressively putting themselves out on multiple chains. They're now on Canto, they're on ZK Sync Era, they're on multiple chains, and it's smart from my perspective. Number one, it increases their potential volume. Number two, it's a recognized brand. And number three, it puts them in a position that if anything happened with BNB chain, they would not be completely and totally dependent on Binance and the value of BNB, right? So I think it's a smart move by them. You know, one thing I was thinking about the other day when I was looking at the PancakeSwap stuff for Canto was, I don't know anything about the founders of PancakeSwap. I wonder if it's a totally a non-platform. Have you ever looked at anything related to them?
No, I never really saw anything about them either. I think it must be a non.
It's got to be, but it's kind of crazy because they're fucking huge. I mean, you know, the largest number of retail traders. And I don't know a goddamn thing about the company.
They came out of the Binance Launchpad too, right?
I believe they did, but they were like, I mean, they were first out of the gate, right?
Yeah, so I remember that.
This is one of those examples of, like, they don't even have an about us. This is one of those examples of you know, being first to market actually being a winning strategy, right? Because they seized it, grabbed it, and own it. But yeah, it's interesting.
They got tons of retail, global retail, ex US, ex Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. They got the largest number of retail traders in the world.
Where that's where the growth's going to come from.
Now, that's right.
I used to trade in there a bit. And it was one of the first ones I really looked at when I was trying to figure out yield farming. I mean, I looked at SushiSwap, I looked at PancakeSwap, you know, and I was trying to figure out what they were all doing a couple of years ago. And I've always been super impressed. Now, also, let's just ZK Sync for a minute. you know, I've been in there a lot the last 3 weeks.
Oh, you have? Good.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on over there?
Well, you know, there is an airdrop coming, evidently. And so let me give you a...
Wait, real quick before you get into it.
Yeah.
Niblet says he's channeling Sean. He says, is it a ZZ puppet show?
There you go, buddy.
Well, it Sean's may be. Buddy. And I can see Binance acquiring it, right?
Yeah. Well, no. So I looked at, well, to segue in properly, I looked at PancakeSwap. I saw it listed as a protocol there because I'm trying to find the other ones that I don't know about.
Yeah.
Saw it on DeFi Llama, clicked through, and I think there's like $300 in liquidity on there on PancakeSwap, but still they're there. So look at the organic ones coming out of ZK Sync. And I'll give you a couple of names. Kanagi.finance, K-A-N-N-A-G-I. Pinnico is another one. And a third one, which is also on one other EVM DEX. Can't remember which
one.
What
was the second one?
The second one is called the token's Pico, Pinnico. It's a derivatives one. That's not my favorite one, but you'll see the functionality. I like Kanagi and I like Izumi Finance.
Now, so is Kanagi like a beefy?
Yeah, well, look at the... look at the liquidity or the vaults, and you'll see the yields in there. It's got like, you know, single staking both for Kana and Izzy of where you're getting 350% still or something like that. So, but my point is that the big one is with Izumi Finance.
Oh, okay, they don't show you anything unless you're connected, huh?
Yeah, it's clean. You could connect to it if you want. It's
I've got a scrap wallet I can connect. That's good.
Yeah, but it's look, the interesting thing is that in Izumi Finance, they're committed to distributing half the points they get or half the tokens they get in the airdrop to users. Okay. So if you swap stuff over there, I think it's $500 in swaps a week. You get all these bonus points, $50 worth of Izzy a week. I mean, buying and selling, you don't have to like just keep accumulating. Right. So, you know, you just go in there and ETH to USDC, USDC to ETH, bang, bang, you know, get your volume. Then you'll get the points. And then you'll get the tokens when they get the airdrop from ZK Sync. But then you'll also get the credits for all your own activity on those. And so,
what the fuck? Wait a minute. Index composition. I'm like, wait a minute. Bitcoin is WBTC on this is paying 101.1%?
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I mean, to me, I like ZK Sync. It's fast. And don't get thrown by the gas fees that they estimate on because you get 90% of that back.
That's
so you
awesome.
You might see something and go, oh, shit, that's $12. But then you look at it in the you know, scan and you see, oh, okay, I got rebated $11.10.
What the fuck, man? 101.1%.
Yeah, look at those yields. I mean, I'm only playing in two there. I'm doing the Izzy one and I'm doing the Kana one. So, you know, I'm pulling down like, you know, multiple thousands of Kana tokens from my Izzy position every day.
Is Beefy on ZK Sync?
I don't think so. I don't think they're
there. Oh, man, because I'd love to see some fucking automation on this WBTC pool. I'll be in that in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Shit.
So you look at shit like that. So again,
look at this. USDC and WEATH, 116%.
Yeah.
BTC, nobody's USDT, over here yet. 83%. What the fuck, Joe?
Yeah, so I've been in here for a couple of weeks.
57.5% on USDT?
Fuck yeah, dude. It's like, I mean, so then look at 61% on BUSD, 350 on Izzy.
Yeah, I'm going to dump out. I'm diving in here and I'm going to just dump out profits in case ends up being a rug pull.
Just bleed it for a while.
Yeah,
But it's organic. It's on ZK Sync. So these are the ones that I think you're going to get the most credit for.
Nice.
You know, as far as the overall airdrop, and also I use Orbiter Bridge a lot, and I've used the Rhino Bridge, and I've used the ZK Sync Bridge. So
that's awesome.
You know, we got our airdrop experts in the channel, but look, I mean, look at this. I mean, look at those yields. It's insanity. Yeah,
it is insanity. That's what makes me nervous. But I want a model that lets me just, you know, dive into these, fucking take the yields and dump the coins to, you know, maybe dump 50% of all. 50% of all gains to USDC until you break even and then fucking just stack it. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm betting that they're going to be a player on that chain.
Nice. Find.
There is one big competitor there. SyncSwap that has the most TVL, I think 80 million of all the protocols, but I think Kanagi is third. I think second is Izumi Finance, or maybe no, Izumi's third, and maybe Kanagi's 10. I don't remember, but you know, those, just look at those lists and pick the top protocols and just go look at them and see if they fit with what you're doing. But these were the first ones I ran into, and I'm like, all right, well, I take everything out of Arbitrum, send it over there, and, you know, just start playing the game again.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, dude.
And it's fast, and, you know, I mean, it's not that expensive. It's a great L2.
That's awesome. I'm so going to look at this. This is great, dude. This is really good find. You know what? Don't forget to send me the other projects so I can put them in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Just send me a message with the other ones, because I didn't write them down.
Okay.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Nice find. Nice segue, too. That was great, Joe. I love that.
You got it, buddy.
BNB Chain put out a quarter two report saying that smart contracts continue to arise amid the market downturn. Noted the rise in verified smart contracts highlights the demand for security, reliability, and stability. Although some consider second quarter a lost quarter, others find that the smart contracts industry remains resilient. Even though the crypto space suffered from lower investments from venture capital firms, developers continue to deploy smart contracts, signaling a growing demand for blockchain-based solutions. Now, my initial response to that, until I look at them, is, okay, just because people are deploying contracts, it could just mean that they're fucking, you know, putting out shit to scam people and rug people, but hopefully they've actually looked at some of them. So I don't know. According to the report, platforms like BNB Chain, Ethereum, Polygon, Phantom, Avalanche, Arbitrum, and Optimism all recorded a percentage increase in verified smart contracts in quarter two. Looks like BNB Chain was the largest, Ethereum second, Polygon third, and that's not Optimism, Arbitrum fourth in new smart contracts deployed on the chains. So that's interesting. That's an interesting metric. I don't know how much bearing it has in overall growth of the industry, because it may just be people desperate and posting copy paste contracts. But you know, it's still interesting metric, interesting number. So, I didn't look at this one yet. Where is my I had a new investment that I wanted to look at into a gaming platform. I think it was 30 million, but I can't find it.
Animoca so. Brands invest 30 million in crypto payments.
There's a payments platform. There was another investment in a gaming platform that I thought was interesting, and I must have accidentally closed the window. I don't know.
Hey, quick question. Not to change the topic a tiny bit, but I saw that Shizzy and Niblets have changed their show name to Ordinal something.
And oh.
So it's like they're going all in on the Ordinals, it looks like. And
yeah, so Shizzy's becoming a Bitcoiner.
Yeah, I'd love to get him on. We should because I have to admit, other than investing in like a couple of Ordinal-related tokens and trading them out two or three times on ETH,
yeah,
I haven't done anything over there on the BTC
Ordinal. That's all I did was that one trade.
Yeah.
And I made $1,000, so that was good.
Hell yeah. That's lunch money.
Yeah.
You know, but I just would like to get more perspective on that and learn more from him on what he's seeing. So
Yeah. Let's figure out a time to get in chat with him. That's a good idea.
Well, maybe we'll go on his show, you know, again.
Hey, there you go.
And let them tell us what there it's you all go. About. Educate us.
WorldCoin, the WorldCoin hype, causes Optimism to leapfrog Arbitrum in daily transactions. You know, two things on this. First of all, that's pretty interesting. I didn't even know WorldCoin was on Arbitrum, but you know, I mean, Optimism, but that's an interesting choice. And I think it makes sense. But secondarily, you know, everybody in the crypto space, we're all having a grand old time making fun of the illegitimacy and the eye scanning and all of that shit as it relates to WorldCoin. But it's something that you and I have talked about multiple times, Joe, and it is this, is we're all over here bashing these shitty projects, WorldCoin, XRP, Cardano, whatever, right? But these guys, like, I mean, you know, you can't get more KYC than fucking scanning somebody's eyeballs, right?
Yeah.
These guys are all positioning themselves to take advantage of the regulatory scrutiny, take advantage of putting money in people's pockets when there's not as much money in people's pockets, and potentially putting themselves in a position to control what the perception is of what crypto is in the rest of the planet. And to me, that's a very dangerous thing. And so, you know, I tweeted out yesterday, I thought I had the tweet loaded, but I guess I don't. I tweeted out yesterday, I was replying to my buddy, Mark Jeffries, that yes, we can all make fun of this. And yes, it's completely stupid. But number one, humans are more than willing to give up their identity and privacy for money. We know that. Like 90% of the fucking planet will do that any day of the week. So for us to scoff at that, yes, it's stupid. And yes, it doesn't make sense. And yes, it's in opposition to everything that we're supposed to stand for. But the fucking fact is that, you know, they're getting millions of people to sign up for this shit. And we're not getting millions of people to sign up for DeFi. And that to me is a significant risk. And it kind of speaks back to what we always talk about is that we've done a shitty job of shifting the narrative in this space for what we bring to the table, what our value is, the transparency that we bring to the table, all the things that the BlackRock CEO and other people have talked about. We've done a horrendous job of getting the attention of the average human on the planet beyond, let me see if I can make some money on this fucking Bitcoin, right? And that, this puts us in a really dangerous position. We know Cardano's angling. We know XRP is already tightly integrated institutionally and elsewhere. You know, and WorldCoin is like going on the retail side, trying to snap up, you know, the average Joe. And there are very few things that can compete with them. World, you know, Binance maybe in terms of the number of average Joes that are signed up, but we better start taking this shit seriously, and we better start working on how to educate people. So,
okay, I saw a little headline about this somewhere over the last couple of days, and I was like, oh. Okay, so people are scanning their eyes to access this, and so they're tying their eyes to their wallets and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, next. I just skipped it. But what I was curious about was, you know, of course, why anybody would give up a biometric eye print is beyond me to some application. I don't get that at all. It's stupid. But
well, it is stupid. But we do it all the time, right?
We
give up our information all the time.
Yes,
we're willing to do it. Nothing in our lives is private anymore. So for us to kind of say, fuck WorldCoin, nobody's going to do their retina scan. Guess what?
Everybody's going.
Exactly.
Yeah, because again, people don't, I mean, they don't get it.
No.
This whole generation, particularly Gen Zers, you know, they just give it all away. And it's never been weaponized against them, or they haven't realized it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you walk into a meeting, I'll tell you what, everybody in that meeting is looking at apps that go through all of your latest social posts. They know exactly what teams you like, where you went to school, what your preferences are. When you walk in that meeting, your drink is going to be there, or they're going to open up with a discussion about something that's super familiar to you, like
sports, exactly.
The game.
Exactly.
They're just gaming you, and then you let your guard down, and then all of a sudden they come in and cut your heart out.
Yep.
So, you know, you have to be careful. But I'll tell you what, the eyes stuff, I've been real careful not to give those up, but I gave them up to skip the line at the airport.
So did I. So
I gave up the clear eyes. So
I got the clear thing, right? So I was willing to do it. And you start looking at what comes up in that clear app. Look at all the shit they're doing to market to you now.
Hell yeah.
Right? You know?
I know.
So I wanted to find, where was this? Here we go.
Oh, Unisat is launching a DEX with a swap.
Nice. This is the line. I don't know where this is. This is the line of people somewhere in Asia to get their eyeballs scanned.
What are they getting for this scan?
They get 25 WorldCoin.
Oh, and it's priced at what right now?
I have no idea. Their market cap is a few billion, I know, right now. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
so. You know, solid. Anyway, my main point here is we are seeding ground. We are seeding ground to people willing to do what it takes to get attention, to be regulatory compliant, to integrate into institutions. And we have done nothing to capture the attention of people to why what we're doing is important. And we can end up sitting here holding our worthless bags of shit because 90% of the planet sees fucking Cardano or WorldCoin as crypto, right? And Bitcoin.
Wow.
And we're being incredibly stupid right now, and we're not getting the word out to help people understand what the risks are to them and everything else. Well, so,
but look, I'll just finalize that thought. And, you know, look,
21 billion market cap for WorldCoin.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that's a little overvalued, but the point is that, you know, if people are just going to give it away like that, then I don't really care, because that's more users into the ecosystem.
Well, it's more users into the ecosystem as long as they're integrated into our ecosystem. And I think WorldCoin with optimism gives a little hope, but you know.
Maybe then they could be customers for Coinbase's play, for Base.
Potentially, you know? Potentially.
Yeah, so maybe that's the way that they're thinking about fencing
that. Well, and if Sam Altman was smart, right? I mean, he's busy with OpenAI. So if he was smart, maybe he does that partnership with Base, right? Like, hey, let me bring all these users over here. They're already KYC'd. I have their eyes.
Is Sam Altman doing the WorldCoin?
Sam Altman is WorldCoin.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that. Okay, yeah. That's a big piece of data. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine AI applications he's going to deploy.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, again, quick segue to Arkham. It's sort of like, I guess everybody did the Arkham airdrop. You know, I did nothing over there. I sent out two emails. And I think I got $390. Of course, I dumped it right away because I knew it was going down. But, you know, part of that process is you are merging your email address with the wallet you register.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they are, you know, building a monster database of everybody's wallets and holdings. So it's something to think about. But you know who the two founders are of Arkham? I don't know if you're on top, if you know this, but one of them is Sam Altman's partner at OpenAI. The second one is a co-founder of Palantir. AI with some, let's say, super questionable data analytics.
Yep.
That's super strong. And I saw their product, Palantir's, like 13 years ago for another client. They were doing some stuff at the on a corporate level, not government. And it was super impressive then. I can only imagine what shit does now.
Absolutely. Well, here's the bottom line. Look how they're all positioning themselves. Like, look at Altman, look at Arkham, look at WorldCoin. They're all positioning themselves to be the safe standard, right? And and that's dangerous. And it's dangerous because look, when Congress is lazy, regulators around the world are fucking lazy. And somebody comes to you and says, I got everybody's info. We're going to keep everybody safe and sound. Don't worry about it. You'll be able to track all the money and you can deploy your fucking CBDC here. What are they going to do? Spend hours and months researching and trying to define something, or just say, hey, let's go with this standard. It's how they do business all the time. Congress in the United States, they don't fucking write legislation most of the time for an industry. The industry writes it for them. Well, if you give people an easy way out, they're going to take it. So anyway, Shizzy said, Apple already has my scan. I might as well give $500 in WorldCoin, laughing out loud. Yeah, but Apple, I trust to not use my scan for anything else
externally.
Externally. Exactly. I don't trust Sam Altman not to. So
no, I don't either. I would. I'm not a huge Apple fan, as you guys all know, but I'm not a hater either.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a $3 trillion market cap company. I mean, right, and they're not giving an attaboy on that. You know?
Well, and look, this is a company that focuses on privacy.
Privacy.
Yeah, and so from my perspective, like they told the EU last week that if they're required to break end-to-end encryption, they will no longer offer FaceTime or messages in the European Union.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, they got the power. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, they got the power to buy friggin' countries.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, anything like that, you see a fine, you see it's kind of fall apart. Oh, I know. It's kind of like the SBF stuff. Okay.
Right.
So, hold on.
You're right.
Unplug my headset real fast. Sorry.
That's okay.
You know, you saw yesterday or this morning, they basically dropped all the campaign finance charges.
Right.
Because, you know, when he was extradited from the Bahamas, that was a claim that they told the Bahamas they wouldn't prosecute on. So now they're whittling down the charges.
Oh, I didn't know that was part of the reason why. I didn't understand. I just saw a headline that they had dropped that charge, but I didn't know that was the reason why.
There's a treaty.
They promised.
Yeah, they promised.
Why the fuck did the Bahamas care about that?
Hell, I don't know. There was an article somewhere I read recently.
Here comes the fucking conspiracies again.
Well, I think that, well, it is what it is. I mean, look, he threw a bunch of money around, but who doesn't? You don't think all these banks are throwing money all over town and all these defense contractors are throwing money all over? I mean, that's the game.
That is the game. If you don't control Congress, you don't win.
So I think he's got a trial date set of October, I believe. So, you know, I mean, well, let's just wait and see how this all plays out. I mean, because if you're going to a jury and all of a sudden the market cap of FTX is higher than when you supposedly destroyed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
to convince a jury at that point. So,
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, so I'm just remembering things that I've read in the last couple of days while you're gone. So I just threw that out there, but go ahead.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's great. Let's see what else. I love Niblets quoting Joni Mitchell. You don't know what you've got until it's gone. Yeah. Yeah. That's so fucking true. We don't have a lot of time, you know, that's really what bothers me is, you've got people who I've praised for taking the mantle, taking the lead on trying to raise money and lobby Congress for crypto. And I appreciate them all doing that. But, you know, Ryan Selkis is off the fucking deep end right now, and he is going to alienate, every member of Congress that's a Democrat that's pro crypto, because he's just fucking ranting and raving like an idiot. He reminds me of Elon Musk right now, because he's going to harm his cause in order for him to be able to fucking say whatever the hell he wants. And it's just
remind me again, who is Ryan Selkis?
He's the Messari CEO. Great guy.
Oh, that's funny as shit.
If you ever get to see him speak on a panel, he's funny as fuck. He doesn't take shit from anybody. I love all of that stuff about him, but he feels like he got so burned by Democrats in the last cycle that he's just fucking going headlong first into the far right. And look, you can't fucking pick sides in this game. You know, the only organization that got away with that is the NRA because they were forced into it. And they hold a big stick over the heads of Republicans. And so that's why they're able to do what they do. But if you come into the fucking lobbying world and you decide right now in 2023 and you say, I'm going to pick sides, I'm going to make you an enemy, then you're going to get enemies, and here's the thing: the political sides are going to flip and flop over and over again in Congress, and you're going to get struck down every time Democrats get control of a House. So, what the fuck are you doing? We've talked about this repeatedly.
Yeah.
Well, and change the fucking narrative. Look, I gotta pull up my tweet because I think I'm brilliant.
Yeah. Well, you know, real quick, right before you get there, go ahead. You know, it's pretty much game over already, to be honest, for the right-wing nationalists. Because when you look at the data on the new Gen Z voters that are the most passionate voters we've ever had in our electorate cycle, and the net difference between the 2016 election and this one coming up in 2024, so 8 years, is, you know, net counting old people dying and young people coming into electorate, it's a plus 52 million.
Yeah, there's no hope.
For Gen Z.
There is no hope for a Republican to be president of the United States in the next cycle, or probably five or six more. And I actually, it's fucking hilarious you brought that up, because I have a draft tweet that I started while I was away about exactly that, saying everybody needs to shut the fuck up about siding with Republicans and thinking somehow DeSantis or Trump are going to be president. They do not have a chance. They are going to lose. There will not be a Republican president. There will not.
The only way there'll be
is if Biden steps down, whoever gets the nomination is on video caught doing something with children. That is about the only way. A month and a half before election day. That's it. That's your only hope to have a Republican president. It's not going to happen. Kids are voting like fucking crazy and they think Republicans are batshit crazy. And you know who else thinks Republicans are batshit crazy?
Women
women and independents. They're gone. Yeah. They're done. They don't trust Republicans. Trump burned the party. So for us, and I'm not trying to be just political. The reason I say that is, and that's what you're getting to, is when you go out and side with those people, you are going to burn and die because Democrats are going. The only reason Republicans have the House is because of extreme voter suppression and extreme gerrymandering.
Yeah.
And that is not going to last forever. And you are going to get burned every time a Democrat has control of one of the houses. And when Democrats have control of both houses and the White House, crypto is fucked if you keep making them an enemy. So, you know.
Yeah. So just play your game and don't make it a crypto versus
anybody. It's just
so
stupid, man. It's like, God, you don't have to pick a side. Grab the Democrats that are on your side, work on education, put them up and show the world they're great people and that we're going to give them money. Show the world that we're going to attack people like Brad Sherman and beat them in their primaries. And you don't have to pick a fucking side. Applaud the Republicans, applaud the Democrats that are on your team. Don't be an idiot. But, you know, it gets emotional. It's politics, whatever. Anyway,
well, he's coming out of like the crypto Twitter perspective, right? So that's kind of hard because, you know, in Twitter, it's much more in your face, much more, you know, attack and name calling and stuff like that. But, you know, that doesn't work in Congress.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, people, you just look at like, who's that chick from Georgia, Boebert or whatever? Just look at her thing. I mean,
Colorado.
It's like, oh, sorry. The other one. Who's the Marjorie Taylor
Greene?
Just look at how she's getting like everybody in the Republican Party pissed off now.
Yeah.
Because she keeps like running her own little independent Twitter operation.
Exactly.
Not integrating with the party. So they're all in it for themselves. Do you hear any noise out of the, you know, who's the ones that the Republicans always want to demonize? The group, the Squad, you know, AOC and all those folks. Did we ever hear anything out of them?
They're not, they got smart. They're not doing stupid, they're not doing stupid shit anymore. They realize that looking extremist is not a good look for a party. And it worked in 2022. And they're like, okay, fuck it. We can get, and look, here's the thing. The extreme left, the progressives, that group gained seats in 2022 and they don't want to fuck it up. And they know that if they lose power in Congress, then they're not going to have any power for their initiatives. Right. So anyway, I posted this shift the narrative and I've talked about this a lot, but I keep wordsmithing it differently because I want to frame it so that people can start educating other people about this shit. Right. So the whole idea is the same stuff that the BlackRock CEO is saying, is we have transparent blockchains. It makes finance better. We need to be making that messaging. So I said, we gave regulators transparent blockchains upon which to track, prevent, and prosecute criminals that have harmed investors. They chose regulation via enforcement and attacks on companies trying to work with them. Thousands of scams and hundreds of billions lost since ICO days, and they've done nothing. Gensler likely can't name one investor they've protected or victim they've helped. In the meantime, people work tirelessly in the crypto community to do their job for them, to train users and to help victims. Like this kinds of, and somebody else made a tweet yesterday saying, oh, you know, this fucking WorldCoin shit is hurting our reputation and this new scam is hurting our reputation. And I'm like, look, we don't associate every charity scam with the entire charity industry. We don't say the entire charity industry is a scam when somebody is scamming old people for charity. We don't have to be associated with this. We can say we provide the tools to make this safer. We provide the tools to make finance safer. And instead, what we do is we keep begging them not to regulate us. So anyway, I don't know. You got me fired up, Joe.
No, that's good. I love the energy. You know, I mean, I think your message is really good, what you're trying to say. What is this? What is Niblet saying? Seriously, the left needs to get on board with BTC as the firewall protecting us from the endemic inequality for private money and state.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Perfect.
And I'm surprised they don't figure that out. That's what surprises me.
Like AOC should be all fucking over Bitcoin. Like all over it.
She would. I mean, she was a bartender and stuff like that. She's got games. So
I know.
She's not on this.
Yeah. There's a book. I listened to this guy on what Bitcoin did.
I think what happens is that, you know, we see when we say crypto, to me, that means, okay, there's Bitcoin here. And that's one thing. I don't even really call that crypto, to be honest. Then there's ETH, and then there's layer twos and everything around ETH. And then there's all the other chains, AVAX, Sol, Phantom, BNB, Arbitrum. Well, Arbitrum was the first example. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's nuance, you know, but someone who doesn't understand, they see WorldCoin, like, they're scanning peasants' eyes over there and God knows where, those crypto criminals, you know, and that's all they see. Or they see, you know, some like celebrity, they, you know, Matt Damon going fortune favors the bold or something, you know, or they see, but they don't have the breakdown, you know, of what it is. So to me, there's layers of credibility. And on the outer fringes is a lot of the edgy stuff that we kind of play in sometimes, you know,
yep.
And we win sometimes and we lose sometimes, but it's to learn the tech and kind of know what's going on and then understand the hustle or the game or whatever's going on there.
Yeah.
But that's different to me than say, you know, Uniswap or Aave, you know, or, you know, any of these kind of chain coins, you know, to me, there's different types. And most people that are just going to ever be Bitcoin people, you know, most of the people in the community will just be Bitcoin people.
Yep.
Because I like that stability, particularly at the high end. So to me, that's different.
Yeah.
You know, Bitcoin to me has always been its own category. And then, you know, the other categories around, you know, everything else, you know, there's different kind of hierarchies there of credibility. You know, me, I always, and I'm not trying to, I know a lot of people like Richard Hart and Pulse Chain, but, you know, I look at that and I'm like, you know, that's a thing where, you know, it's of, you know, everybody following a personality, basically.
Yeah, it's a cult. You know?
And to me, everybody's kind of wanting to believe in that dream. They want to believe. And when you do that perspective, you don't critically analyze things.
That's right. Think,
okay, what is the exit?
Yep.
And you're the one who's a true believer and you hold on to the end when there's nothing. When the play is, as I always say, take friggin' profits.
Yeah.
You know? And play that game, but get out, you know, get in early, get out early, but find ones that are going to turn into something. Yeah. Aave, to me, that's there for the long haul. Uniswap is there for the long haul.
Yeah.
And it's not going here, particularly that new stuff they got going on. And, you know, the chains, a lot of those chains are there for the long haul. You know, the L2s are there for the long haul. ETH is there for the long haul. So, you know, find those for your real money and your play money. Go take some flyers, you know, go play on ZK Sync or something, or go over on Shardium or what are the other ones? The other stuff that's coming. But, you know, break it, segment it, segment that market in your head as to what is, you know, by risk.
Yeah.
And the politicians certainly do not know how to do that. Again, you know, they lump it all in with stable coins, basically.
Exactly.
Which to me is the least crypto thing out there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So people don't get it. We have more detail, but it's hard to communicate.
Niblets, we'll wrap it up. But Niblets makes a good point. And at some point, I need to talk about Phantom, about what's going on with Phantom. But okay. I got to wrap today. Niblets makes a good point. Peter Thiel can't subvert democracy with Bitcoin. He can with Altman and WorldCoin, and that's a really valid point, right?
It is.
You control the money, you can control the democracy. And
he was the lead founder of Palantir, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and Thiel is a piece of shit. I mean, Thiel wants to subvert democracy. He wants government run by billionaires. And he has said it, and he and David Sachs and all of these guys, that's their goal. Their end goal is people are too fucking stupid to vote. We shouldn't allow them to. We need to kill democracy and let billionaires run it because we're all fucking brilliant. And that's the synopsis of what they're doing. Niblet says, and crypto is the perfect vehicle for universal basic income, something near and dear to leftists around the world. It's just such a no-brainer. Yeah, it really does make sense, and it is, and there are the mechanisms there to do it. We just have to fucking get off our asses and figure out how to make sure we let people know what's really going on. So this is the book I was talking about, A Progressive Case for Bitcoin, A Path Toward a More Just, Equitable, and Peaceful World by C. Jason Meyer. Peter McCormick did the foreword. I listened to him on the Peter McCormick show. This guy is a school teacher who took sabbatical? Is that the word for taking time off?
Yeah.
He took a sabbatical to write this book, and he is trying to get it in the hands of progressives to get them to understand that, you know, Bitcoin and crypto, Bitcoin, he's a Bitcoiner, makes a strong case for progressives, what you were talking about earlier, Joe. So that's great.
Well, I think that, you know, look, progressives, you line up on that around Bitcoin, you know, it's a commodity.
Yeah.
We already know that. There's no like regulatory risk there.
Yeah.
And it's not going anywhere. All the other shit is getting sorted.
That's right.
So if you're coming into the market new or you got money or whatever, you know, that's where I would start.
Yeah.
And just accumulating, like Sean says, you know, 100-day TWAP, basically, you know, when you decide to pull the trigger and not one buy. And then just being that for the long haul. But everything else, I'm not in the long haul for anything else, to be honest. I mean,
right.
I hold some, but to me, that's where you try to, you know, take advantage of market dynamics and herd dynamics, H-E-R-D.
Yep.
In those plays. And good stuff will emerge, but, you know, I mean, honestly, I think 70% of it's just shit, to be honest.
Exactly.
IKA shit coins.
There you go. We'll try to get some stuff going next week on the Phantom Foundation stuff. I think there's an opportunity there.
Give us a quick rundown real quick.
Look, well, here's the bottom line. This multi-coin thing, multi-coin, the bridge, the founder and a bunch of executives have been arrested by the Chinese government. So, you know, everybody thinking about going to Hong Kong, you may want to think twice about that. Because
wait, Phantom Foundation people?
No. Well, a multi-coin.
Bridge, I'm sorry.
The bridge. Okay. But there was
multi-chain.
There was a shit ton of liquidity and volume from Phantom locked up there. And so it's caused this kind of decimation of projects, and a lot of projects are now launching on other chains. Things are kind of in chaos. Here's the bottom line. From my perspective, it's a superior chain to almost any other L1. Superior performance, superior technology, superior data, superior everything. And they're launching more improvements on it with their own virtual machine, their own data set system, everything else, right? You've got a bunch of protocols on there that are still strong, and you have a community that's pretty fucking strong still. Because I've done a couple of tweets kind of testing it out over the last couple of weeks, and it's still strong. The foundation has said, look, you know, we had a lot of reliance on multi-chain, and that was stupid. We had conversations with the team. Everyone said that the wallets were actually spread out, et cetera, but the money's locked up. The Chinese government has it. The Michael Kong, the CEO of Phantom Foundation, has gone on multiple interviews I've listened to over the last couple of weeks. He says that they have attorneys in China who are now trying to work with the Chinese government to let them know that the money they have locked up doesn't belong to multi-chain, whatever laws they broke, that it belongs to investors, and that they're harming investors and they're holding their money. So they're trying to work through channels to try to get that communication going. Here's my point. There's a really strong platform here. It's a foundation that has 30 years of runway. Even if they've taken a hit on the price of some of the shit that they have most of their investments are on Ethereum right now. They have a 20 to 30 year runway of developers, 100 plus developers working on that platform. They have a superior technology. They have really good shit there. And so my position on this is this: we're right now doesn't fucking matter. We're in this. You know, if you look at the liquidity drying up and the volume drying up that Sean shows us every week on the data, nothing fucking matters right now. What matters right now is integrating yourself with the real world, making it easier. Oh, they're doing account abstraction. They're doing rewards for developers off of gas fees. Giving yourself, positioning yourself, layering your platform out right now to integrate with gaming, with real world applications, real world investments, real world assets, integrating with other things. You can position yourself right now that it doesn't fucking matter, right? So from my perspective, I'm seriously considering doing some stuff with Kilroy that we've talked about with Phantom. We're in some discussions right now with them. But secondarily, I'm thinking about doing some little bit of accumulation and some staking to build up some more Phantom. Because if they had no runway, if they had no money in the foundation, I'd be like, okay, great tech, but you know, there's no fucking hope for this. But because they have all that fucking money and they have a great team and they have smart, smart people running it, I actually think for me, myself, this is not investment advice. It's not financial advice. Do not do this if you can't afford to lose the money. But for me personally, I'm going to stack some Phantom. I'm at that point because I think that is a long-term play that will eventually could pay off huge. And I think they're trying to make the right moves to position themselves for that. And I don't think the next 6 months matter. I just don't think there's going to be enough volume to matter.
Yeah. What I noticed was that, you know, I didn't realize I'd gotten so impacted by that, but I saw that the TVL was falling off everywhere. And of course, Geist, you know, because of that Heck, they weren't taking new deposits or anything for a while.
Well, guys shut down.
Yeah, I pulled it all out. But I mean, it's still going.
No, they're shutting down the pro. They announced they're shutting it down.
No, I didn't see that announcement. Yeah. I haven't been over there in like 4 days. But
yeah, no, they announced they're shutting it down.
But who's they?
The founders. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how decentralized they're. But I mean, look, Phantom is down to
24 cents.
No, I mean they're down to number 26 from being in the top 10 consistently for the last 2 years in TV.
Yeah, how much? But two questions. So, you know, because I talked to those guys. I talked to some of those guys too about other stuff. But and they always tout that 30-year runway, or at least they were when Phantom was at a dollar and something. You know, how much of that runway was chewed up in this multi-chain fiasco?
No, because most of it was on Ethereum. And the interesting thing is this, I didn't realize how much this had happened. Do you, as much as I badmouth Andre Grenier, and I have given him support lately for communication and doing a much better job, right? But I didn't know this backstory. So, I mean, I knew most of the backstory, but I didn't know the money backstory. So when they took over Phantom, so they were part of the original ICO, Michael Kong, Andre, everything. And they believed these PhDs from Asia that were, or Korea, that were running the project about the tech and the development and everything else, right?
Hedera guys?
What's that? No, not Hedera. Phantom was launched separately and it had another name. I don't remember what it was, but they found out that this shit was bogus, and Michael Kong and Andre and some other developers jumped in and took it over, right? Mm-hmm. The money was spent and gone except for a small amount. Andre took that money and fucking staked it, yield farmed it, traded it, and got them to this 30-year run that they've gotten now because they had no money. But these guys all dove in and built this thing up, changed the tech, rebuilt everything, got the code in order, were able to launch it, and then built up the foundation's treasury single-handedly from trading and staking and investing and everything else. And that to me says a lot, right? I mean, that's people that know how to manage their fucking money and be smart about it. And so from my perspective, Phantom is actually, from an investor perspective, it's in a really good place, right? If you think these people are smart enough to come out of all this and launch and do good shit, if you think you can get they can get their shit together on biz dev and partnering, which I think is the biggest hole, right? And they've got two new people coming in, executive level biz dev and marketing people coming into that they've hired for the foundation.
Who are they going to report to? Do you know? Are they?
I don't know. I don't know that. Okay. If they're reporting to Simone, if they're reporting to Michael Kong, I don't know. Okay. And if you think the tech is solid, or even from my perspective, I think it's one of the best L1s out there, then to me, that's my rationale for this is a good investment. So we'll see.
Well, you know, look, I don't think I bought Phantom the first time when it was 3 cents or something like that. But, you know, it's been good to me.
Yeah.
I've taken two runs up and, you know, cashed out a whole ton twice. So to me, they'll always have a special place in my heart because they always perform for me. And I agree. They're kind of in that situation where they're like how, and I'm not trying to equate them with them, but like how Cardano and Stellar were at the end of the 2017-18 cycle.
Right.
You know, those were down like, I mean, I remember Stellar being down at like 4 cents, maybe 3 cents, 2 cents.
Yeah.
Cardano, single pennies. And I remember because that's where I was liquidating huge positions to pay tuition.
Right.
Which of course was turned that 1 year of tuition into a $500,000 bill, basically, because I left all that money on the table selling it.
Oof.
But the point is that, you know, this is one that I think if you get in and hold, I mean, I'd like the price to be a little lower.
Me too.
If you get in and hold it or TWAP it, like Sean always says, for a period of time, I think you're going to do okay on this.
Yeah.
They got a team that executes.
Yeah. And listen, folks, we can't guarantee that they're going to recover, that it's going to happen. But everything I see, and you and I also have like personal relationships with a lot of these people. So that's another reason we have confidence, right? But that doesn't mean it's going to work.
No.
This could completely fail. They could be a lost ghost town of an L1, and you could lose all the money you put into it. So don't put any money into it just because we're talking about it.
I'll tell you, my experience with them is just around taking them potential deals.
Yeah.
And everybody I've seen there has been a straight shooter, straight up. I mean, I haven't talked to Andre or anybody like that, but you know, all the other dudes, you know.
Yeah. Well, we met Michael Kahn. We met the CEO. We've met Simone. We know him. We trust him. And
Sam.
Sam. And it's still got a good community. I mean, that's what's really weird is they were really one of the things that first attracted me to Phantom was how hardcore their community is. And even though there's some grumbling and grousing and people are leaving, there are still like people who are like, yeah, fuck that. This shit is good that we've got here, you know? And so from my perspective, that's a really positive thing. And for me, it's a bet I'm willing to make. And look, I'll tell you what, if anybody listening, whoever's left listening, because we've gone long, if anybody is listening, wants to get together and talk about setting up a Phantom node with the now lower requirements stacking FTM, I'm open to helping try to get that set up because I think it would be a great opportunity long-term if you're willing to take the risk. And it is risky and you could lose everything and you shouldn't do any of this with any money you can't afford to lose.
Yeah, and you can lose it in anything you do too.
Exactly.
So, you know, but do your own analysis. Don't just listen to us. Of course, that's what we always say. And, you know, and pick the stuff that makes sense for you within your appropriate risk tolerance levels.
Niblet says getting a refund from American Airlines is hard. Getting a refund from the CCP is probably a little bit harder.
Yeah, it is.
I love fucking Niblet's humor. Niblet, you just need to do crypto. You need to be the crypto stand-up guy, right? You know, he's funny as shit.
He's rolling through. I don't want to say anything. I forgot we're public, so
yeah.
He's going to be nearby, is what I was going to tell you. But I'll.
You're not coming back? Are you coming back into town by that time?
I might be. I have to do one thing before.
I didn't reply to him. Fuck. Sorry, Nibbles.
Yeah. No. I saw the message last night. So, but no. I've got to get back for a couple days before taking my daughter off to college at the end of next month. So, you know, it's just getting all that stuff done, but I'm in no mood to spend any time in Miami right now. Just
because, dude, after being in San Diego, I want to be out of here so bad.
Yeah.
And then I came back to like 100-degree fucking temperatures too. So
I know what I saw the water temperature down by Key Largo was 102.
Yeah. We're just boiling fish here. It's like fucking
supposedly those reefs like Lewes Reef and another one down off of Marathon. They're like dead. From this hot water.
You folks think that the planet's not burning are idiots. I'm sorry, because it's fucking burning.
They say the Gulf Stream is going to collapse in the next, like, it's already collapsing. That's why it's so hot in the water temperature there.
Yeah, we don't need those. The aliens are like, we don't have to fucking kill them. They're going to all die anyway.
Exactly. Yes, we are. But I'll coordinate on that with you offline. Cool. Because I do have a couple of meetings to take down there too. So
okay.
I hope it coordinates when he's swinging.
Yeah, and Niblets, I will reply to you shortly, but yes, those dates are fine for me, buddy. So we'll work it out because I'd love to see you and meet you in person. And I hope things are going well for you. What you were working on is working out. So,
down south, you know, where he was, he's working on his tan down there.
So there is no, oh, wait a minute. I have to clear filters. I wanted to see if Kanabi was on Beefy.
Probably not.
K-A-N-N-A-G-I.
The token is K-A-N-A.
Oh man. I wish it was on fucking Beefy. I'd be on that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I just basically let it run for a couple of days and then come in and do my thing. But I just don't want to get into the daily stuff. So I just do it once every couple of days now. And my whole strategy is like, you know, when I did the genome style, the genome ETH pool over on Camelot, remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So my results of that, just so you know, is I ended up putting about $511 in. Well, that was the peak value. I didn't put much in because most of it's on another chain. And what I got out of that, well, of course, the value of the holdings dropped to like 410.
Right.
But I added another $200 worth of Gene and another $100 worth of USDT. So I started with 500 and ended up with 700 in 3 months. So, damn. You know, if you're going bigger numbers, you know, you're going to do really well. But I was just over there messing around with just what I had on Arbitrum. And, you know, I, cautious on those two-sided pools, of course.
Yeah.
But that's a token I believe in. So look, what is that? That's 500 to 700. I mean, what is that? That's 40% return in 3 months. That's
fucking awesome, dude.
So, you know, those are the kind of things you can do. So when you look at, I mean, I'm not preaching to you on this. I'm more just colloquializing it. But, you know, we look at Kanagi and you look at those 350, or look at Izumi Finance and look at the pools there. You know, you get the yield, but it's early. So it's going to hold. Like when I started on, I think the Izumi Finance one on Kanagi, I think it was 800% interest.
Right.
Well, now it's down to 350. Yeah. So, you know, more people are coming in. But the prices of the tokens have been dropping because everybody's dumping, you know, the rewards. So you got to play that game a little bit. But with those yields so high, you know, if you're smart and don't forget about it, you know, you could come out ahead.
Yep.
With the token you want. And then hopefully it makes a run. So.
Yeah, I love it. One other note on Phantom, I completely forgot, but Layer Zero has picked up the mantle from the multi-chain debacle, and they have now introduced USDC, USDT, WETH, and WBTC on Phantom. Layer Zero is the aggregate chain messaging system that allows for cross-chain across dozens of chains. And Layer Zero is great. I'd love to see, I'd love to see a tighter integration between Kanto and Phantom now that Layer Zero is integrated in both of them. Cause I think it'd be really interesting to have like two chains partner up and see what happens. But anyway, that's also good news.
So what did we meet from Axelar? What was the guy's name out at ETH Denver?
Incredible.
Yeah. He's in admissiondefi.com website. There'll be an episode there with, or was that a DeFi lunch one? I can't remember. It's one or the other. But go find it.
Oh, Redeem episode's going to hit tomorrow, as long as I can get the graphics finished up tonight. So should hit tomorrow. So guys, look at the Mission DeFi feed. There will be another interview coming out tomorrow. So take a look at that.
Excellent. All right.
All right, buddy. Let's wrap it up.
Done.
All right, folks, if you haven't joined our community yet, t.me/missiondefi, t.me/missiondefi. That's the only task you have to do today. You don't have to rate us. You don't have to review us. You don't have to subscribe. You don't have to set our alerts. Just go to t.me/missiondefi because that's where the magic happens. That's where Niblets makes even more jokes. That's where Sean tells us what's going to happen in the market. That's where Shizzy pitches us and shills us all the cool new ordinal tech and projects. Get over there. Because you're missing out, and start learning, start getting the alpha. And then when you get there, don't be quiet. Contribute. Give us your opinions. Give us your thoughts. Tell us what you're investing in, what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks. Joe, have a great afternoon.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Welcome back. Glad you had a fun time with your son on a nice little fun trip. Sounds super cool. And, you know, to everyone else, you have a great weekend. And we'll see you soon. Mm-hmm.